Today, how global banks hold all the cards. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, Wise Analytics Post, covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. The global financial crisis represented a watershed for the banking sector, marked by an overhaul of the regulatory framework, long-lasting changes to the economic and financial environment, as well as shifts in the competitive landscape for financial services. Global banks adapted to the new environment, absorbing sharp declines in financial performance, shifts in financial intermediate and commercial product lines, and across geographies. And despite all that, they tightened their grip on the global financial system. And this has a significant impact for global financial stability and on us. Now, the IMF just published a working paper which delves into the structural changes which have taken place, titled Post-Crisis Challenges in Global Bank Business Models, a New Taxonomy. Note that the IMF working papers describe research in progress by the authors and are published to elicit comment and to encourage debate. The views expressed in the IMF working papers are those of the authors and therefore don't necessarily represent the views of the IMF, its board, or management. But the paper makes the point that most analysis of global banks tends to be based on statistical methodology, such as cluster analysis and regulatory classifications, suited to classifying large heterogeneous groups of banks into a broad business model class based on a few balance sheet and income statement ratios. And while this may be useful from a risk analytic perspective, they miss some of the real shifts that have occurred. So this paper offers an alternative approach based on more detailed analysis of their business operations. Such a bottom-up approach facilitates a mapping of changes at the bank level to broader shifts in the global banking system that are relevant to global financial stability. And this paper focuses on G-SIBs, or Global Systemically Important Banks. These are banks with such heft that they could bring the global economy to its knees and are frankly too big to fail. Despite significant business shifts and exits from activities since the GFC, they continue to play a crucial role in the global financial system. The 30 banks currently designated as G-SIBs have maintained dominant positions in the international banking system. These banks together hold more than $50 trillion in assets and account for more than one-third of the global banking system's total assets and loans, and they play an essential role in international capital market services, the international financial infrastructure, and international lending activities. In several of these product markets, they collectively comprise more than 75% of global bank market shares. And one concerning example is the estimated $600 trillion of derivatives. The G-SIBs hold around 75% of these exposures, and much of this, of course, is directly speculative activity. Now, the list of G-SIBs may surprise you, with four from China: Industrial and Commercial Bank of China, China Construction Bank, Bank of China, and Agricultural Bank of China. Three from Japan: Mitsubishi Financial Group, Mizuho Financial Group, and Sumitomo Mitsui Financial Group. There are 10 from Europe, which excludes the UK, and these include ING Group, BNP Paribas, Crédit Agricole, Société Générale, Deutsche Bank, UniCredit, Banco Santander, Nordea Bank, UBS Group, Credit Suisse Group. From the UK, HSBC, Barclays, the Royal Bank of Scotland, and Standard Chartered. And from North America, the remainder are JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America, Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, Bank of New York Mellon Corp, State Street, Wells Fargo, and the Royal Bank of Canada. Note there are no Australian banks included in this list. But these 30 G-SIBs control collectively more than 970 subsidiaries. And the subsidiaries are categorised by the nature of banking into three groups: banking, 760, markets, 160, and wealth management, 50. They're also categorised by geography into either domestic, 270, or foreign, 700 subsidiaries. Now, whether the subsidiaries operating in the same country jurisdiction of the parent G-SIB. The paper then looked at a number of dimensions across these G-SIBs. The first was the lines of business. across six categories. These included consumer banking, predominantly personal financial services banking, mainly for households, wealth management, private banking, funds management and insurance, commercial banking, which is lending to small and medium enterprises. Note that many banks allocate this across corporate and consumer banking. Corporate banking, which includes lending to corporate customers, particularly large corporates. And many banks also include in this category investment banking services such as underwriting and corporate advisory. Markets, including both revenue from brokerage across all instruments, equities, fixed income, currencies, commodities, and related gains and losses on trading positions. And then transaction services, including payments, cash management, and settlement and clearing services, mainly for corporate and financial institution customers. And the IMF presented the results by splitting these 30 G-SIBs into several groupings, three smaller clusters of narrower strategies, investment banks, transaction banks, and wealth managers, and two clusters of broader strategies, four corporate banks and eight consumer banks, and a large cluster of 12 universal banks. The second dimension was geography. First, each bank's revenues are split between its home market and revenues by four broader geographic regions: North America, Europe, Middle East and Africa, Latin America and Asia Pacific. Thresholds are then set to classify geographic orientation. Specifically, local banks are those that derive more than 80% of revenues from their home country markets. Global banks generate significant revenues across two or three broad regions, and regional banks are those which are neither local nor global and derive a high proportion of revenues from their home region. Nearly two-thirds of G-SIBs are global. Some banks, for example Standard Chartered and HSBC, have no readily identifiable single home market. There are also several local banks included among the G-SIBs, mainly due to their size, like Chinese banks, Bank of America and Wells Fargo in the US. Between these two extremes, there is considerable variation combining the two dimensions above, along with the total assets ascribable to each group. Using this grouping of business models, more than half of the G-SIB assets are universal banks, followed by a quarter of assets in consumer banks. And banks with narrower strategies account for less than 20% of G-SIB assets. From the geographic perspective, global banks account for about half of G-SIB assets, while a third of G-SIB assets are local banks, and a fifth regional banks. The IMF paper then looks at other dimensions, including funding, but I'm not going to discuss that here. But their conclusions are significant. Banks have made substantial adjustments in bank business models in the wake of the GFC. Profitability across all categories of business models are lower than pre-crisis, with the largest decline in returns found in investment banks and corporate bank models, which were hardest hit in the crisis and faced the most significant regulatory tightening in response. Eight G-SIBs, over a quarter, have altered their business mix sufficient to migrate to a different business model. Some banks have shifted business model shifts from market-based services towards personal financial services. The dominant shift has been from corporate banking and markets towards consumer banking and wealth management. At the same time, consumer banks are increasingly focused on their more profitable consumer business lines by reducing corporate banking and markets business lines. More generally, as banks have sought to diversify revenue sources, a number of banks have moved towards a more universal approach in providing financial services. These changes in bank business models and in the provision of services, along with various lines of business, have broadly been in line with the thrust of strengthened regulation aimed at reducing systemic risk. And this is particularly evident in the provision of capital market services. At the consolidated group level, there has been a broad shrinkage in balance sheet use for warehousing risk related to capital market activities. And market risk intensity for G-SIBs has declined by roughly half since its peak in 2008. Adjustment in bank business models are ongoing, and there are new challenges to entity structures for funding of models for organising international activities of global banks, due in part to increasing regulatory focus on liquidity and resolution requirements. The international wholesale model may be more vulnerable, given its reliance on the flexible cross-border flows of wholesale funding among international branches. And subsidiarised models appear less vulnerable, as they already rely almost entirely within nationally segregated structures for funding. However, the paper finds that G-SIB's international subsidiaries are less profitable than domestic incumbents in many host countries, particularly in emerging economies. And in the absence of a clear competitive advantage, declining personal financial services banking margins in these markets, a frequent byproduct of financial deepening in emerging banking systems, poses an increasing challenge to international PFS banking models. These structural trends will need to be closely monitored for how they may impact the liquidity of global markets, the fungibility of local liquidity pools, and the resilience of the global financial system to shocks. But my final point, and one not made in the paper, is this. These G-SIBs have a stranglehold on global finance, and given their market presence, with some lines controlling more than 75% of services, regulators and central banks are going to face an uphill task. Indeed, the events of the last year, where the Fed switched from a rising rate scenario, remember the market falls at the end of last year, to cutting rates, and the resurrection of repo market activity to provide liquidity to the system, are examples where markets won over central bankers. The undue influence of a small number of large financial players is likely to continue to the detriment of ordinary people. G-SIBs will continue to look after their own interests, not ours. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.